This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And this hour, you are going to learn to get the most out of your listening. We'll talk about how important listening is. We'll show you how to test your hearing at home or in the office, or test your boss's hearing, who's never listening to you, right? She certainly needs a hearing test. We can help you with that. Lots of great stuff this hour. Political listening we'll talk about. You can't miss it. But let's begin by listening carefully to this.
You know, they really are trying to stoke up this racial stuff.
Racial stuff? He's an African-American candidate, Ben Carson is, and he says racial stuff? Is he uncomfortable talking about this?
We are going to have to get beyond that. You know, I was asked by a reporter, why don't you talk about race very often? I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon.
Why would being a neurosurgeon make an African-American uninterested in addressing race in America, especially now? It's a question a lot of socially conservative African-Americans are asking about the Republican frontrunner. Ben Carson's success is a positive. His demeanor is a positive. Even being taken down by the media over his record is reminiscent of some other attempted takedowns of African-American politicians. But not addressing race, that could be a deal breaker for Theodore R. Johnson III, a former White House fellow and military officer and doctoral candidate at Northeastern University. He describes himself as a Republican and says he's looking for what he calls a civil rights Republican. And he told us, as interesting as Ben Carson is, Theodore is still looking.
Ben Carson, his life story is folklore for a lot of African-American youth, especially in my generation in the 80s, 90s, growing up in middle school, high school age. And he's sort of the proverbial story of, if you work hard, no matter your circumstances, you can achieve anything. That takes on special meaning for blacks because we have the added burden of being black in America, so that sort of presents some hurdles that others don't have to deal with. So it's not just about being American and working hard, but it's being black and American and working hard, and you can still have success. And he sort of represents that story that provides a lot of, you know, hope and optimism for young folks.
But particularly your generation saw him as a real role model, and he never really had to open his mouth much, but he definitely was a symbol of success, and he was absolutely at the top of his game. So he fit right into a if he can do it, I can do it kind of narrative. Secondly,
absolutely,
he's conservative. He's a lot like Grandma and Grandpa, who may be all about the civil rights movement, but they also have some very conservative views on who you're going to date and what are you going to do with your life. And tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, and so I think his upbringing is very much like many blacks' upbringings when it comes to social conservatism, and I think that's really rooted in the Christian faith that's in the Deep South, and then much of the blacks that migrated from the Deep South to the Midwest, of the Detroit, and then up as well as into New York and Northeast. They brought that Christian tradition with them, and that just is inherently imbued with these social conservative values. For blacks, though, social conservatism also meant, you know, like who you could date was based on race. That's not anything from the Bible. That's just sort of how it was interpreted for us. It's a sort of a contradiction when we are very liberal with civil rights, but very socially conservative. And social conservatism and Jim Crow meant that blacks don't have civil rights. So there is a little bit of some tension there between two things that propel much of the black culture, which is a belief in equality as well as the Christian tradition traditionally, historically.
Now, so, do you think there's a cleavage within the electorate in black America where if Ben Carson comes off as credible, his social conservatism is attractive to African Americans who might otherwise vote Democratic every single time?
I think so. But I don't think that social conservatism translates into votes for the socially conservative party. And that's because that conservatism is wrapped up with a whole bunch of other issues that don't necessarily benefit or interest all blacks, specifically around civil rights.
Are you saying civil rights trumps social conservatism?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Every day of the week. Absolutely. And so if the Republican Party had a more progressive civil rights platform, I really believe that you would see black people beginning to express politically some of their other interests. I mean, many blacks are social conservatives, many are fiscal conservatives, many are defense hawks and foreign policy interventionists. But that part of our political behavior isn't able to be expressed because it is trumped by, can I vote? You know, if you're the party that wants to disassemble the Voting Rights Act because it's no longer necessary and supports the implementation of voter identification laws that makes it disproportionately harder for black people to vote, then how I stand on where I stand on the Keystone Pipeline is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, what I think about what we should do in Syria doesn't matter.
Let's explore that for a second. A long time ago, and you were a youngster probably learning about maybe Ben Carson around this time, when Clarence Thomas was being confirmed,
right.
he was viewed as a conservative African-American who was sort of being played by the Bush administration and not necessarily credible among African-Americans until he played this card in a very dramatic moment during his confirmation hearing.
As a black American, as far as I'm concerned, it is a high-tech lynching for uppity blacks who in any way deign to think for themselves, to do for themselves, to have different ideas. And it is a message that unless you kowtow to an old order, this is what will happen to you.
Now, Clarence Thomas was in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing there. But the criticism that Ben Carson has suddenly received about his background, about things that he said, fair criticism, but nevertheless a certain kind of piling on, is that reminiscent of an expected idea that, all right, if you're Ben Carson and you're going to run for president, you have to expect that the white media is going to come after you and that that's going to attract a certain group of people who might be skeptical of that kind of criticism?
I don't know. I mean, we're in a very different time now. If we were talking about this Ben Carson story in the 80s, then perhaps. But we're talking about Ben Carson in the age of Obama, which is it's a little bit different. I think a lot of the criticism Ben Carson has gotten is not because of his race. It's because of what he said. And if we look at how Obama was treated when he was running for office, there were a lot of racialized issues in his running. Jeremiah Wright was absolutely about race. Ben Carson, his criticism, these are the stories you've told about your rise from poverty into being the greatest pediatric neurosurgeon ever. Is it true? I mean, is your inspiring narrative verifiable? And if it's not, then we have to call into question who this person that we've constructed in our minds based on what you've said, is that person, is it real? Is he real? Does he exist?
But are you on the fence as far as Ben Carson is concerned? And do you think there are a lot of African-American voters like you that there is a speech he could give? He hasn't done it and he shows no signs of doing it. But is there a speech he could give that could answer a lot of questions and suddenly maybe pull you and social conservative blacks off the fence?
So I'm on the fence about who Ben Carson is.
Right.
I am not on the fence politically. I do not think he's ready to be president at all. There is not a speech he could give, and I can't think of anything he could do that would make me vote for him to be commander-in-chief. I think he missed his moment. I think when he was at the prayer breakfast with the president, I think that was a moment where he could have been 100% Republican, 100% black, and appealed to socially conservative whites and blacks in the way he sort of presented his argument about healthcare and the future of the country, et cetera. But I think what it turned out to be was an embarrassment. He tried to embarrass the president, and this isn't talked about a lot, but it's almost sacrilege to insult the first black president if you're black on a personal level. And a lot of his attacks against the president have not been about policy. It may start there, but it ultimately boils down to he's sort of insulting him at a personal level. I don't know that there's any black person, black politician that could expect to get black votes and call the president out of his name.
Interesting. So maybe what we've learned from the Ben Carson candidacy, though, is that perhaps there is a scenario out there, a pathway out there for a socially conservative African-American success story who is a little more articulate about the pyramids and, you know, a broad sense of knowing things about the world, who could articulate a civil rights narrative that would attract a large constituency within the African-American community to vote Republican. That's conceivable now in a way that maybe wasn't so during the 2008 election.
Yes, absolutely. Well, without a doubt. And I don't know. I don't see that person on the bench yet. I have, you know, there may be one or two out there that could probably pull it off in a few years. But I absolutely believe that with the right messenger, the Republican Party could gain, you know, 20-30% of the black vote. And I don't believe that that messenger has to be black. I believe that the right white social conservative Republican, and not even the social conservative part, the right white Republican with the right civil rights platform could win black votes, particularly if they're going up against a Democrat that the black Americans aren't all that enchanted with.
Do you see any one in the GOP field?
I don't. And so I tell you, in the current 16 field, I think John Kasich is probably as close as there is to a person that could appeal to black Democratic voters. Because Hillary Clinton has a lot of black support, but there are the margins there of folks that are not happy with the choice. And it's, you know, when you're following Obama, and it's hard to appeal to black voters following the president we've had the last 8 years. I think in this current field, Kasich is probably as close as it gets, and I just don't see him pulling it off.
It's interesting you mentioned Kasich, because coming right up, we're going to be talking with Christine Todd Whitman, a former New Jersey governor who's a big Kasich supporter. So we'll see what she has to say about some of the things you talked about, Theodore. Theodore R. Johnson III, former White House fellow and military officer, now a doctoral candidate at Northeastern University. Remember that name, folks. Ted, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.